Good morning, everyone. It's the final regular season edition of Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also on Sportsnet Television as well. Show Ali, Nick Ashbourne with you for the next hour. Nick, how are we doing today?
Good. I'm happy to be closing it down with you. To use kind of a tortured analogy, I feel like Blake was doing the show. He showed up at the bar at 5 p.m. after work, had a few drinks. He stuck around till like 1:30 and then decided, you know what? I don't have anything to prove. It's time to go home. I'm going to make a smart decision. I think we were the guys who kind of wandered in off the street at 1:59 p.m. to see if we could get a couple shots, and that's what we're doing today.
Yeah, right before last call. This was the bartenders hate you, but here we are.
Business is business.
I actually did see Blake yesterday, funnily enough. The man's a workaholic. He's committed to what he does. So if he's not doing this, he is prepping for the Raptors show. But Blake's the man, and we appreciate him handing the baton off to us. I wanted to start here with you. We're going to be joined by Sportsnet.ca's David Singh, the great David Singh, in a couple of minutes' time. Chat with him about his work for .ca, certainly. And, you know, he's been down there in the scrums. He's talked to John Schneider. He's been writing about the starting rotation. Had a great piece on Spencer Horwitz and mental health. So we'll chat about all those things with David as we wrap up Jays Talk Plus in a couple of minutes. But the Jays are starting the final series of the season tonight at the Rogers Center. It's going to be the Marlins and Jays at the Dome. 7:07 p.m. Eastern is the time of first pitch. They are 74-85 heading into these final three games. So if you take a look at the wild card race these days, Nick, I believe the magic number for both the Tigers and the Royals is down to one. They are sitting at 85-74. So if the Tigers, for example, I'll just use them as an example because they've been one of the hotter teams in baseball in the last month or so. If the Tigers go 1-2 over their last three games, they will still make the playoffs. They will clinch a playoff spot. If they win tomorrow and they lose the rest of the season, which really is just Saturday, Sunday, they will still make the playoffs. Meaning essentially that 86 wins was good enough to get you into the playoffs this year, which I think was a slightly lower total than I would have guessed. Like if you were asking me this number in the offseason last year or during the spring training campaign, I would have said 90,
yeah,
91
people
wins.
People generally say 90 with this format.
So it's actually slightly less this year. We've talked about this before a couple times this week, but no 100-win teams either. So here's my question for you again before we get to David. Where could the Jays have picked up 12 extra wins? And now I know it's not over, and I'm not asking you to go back to the game log and say, like, okay, where is, if Matt Vierling hadn't...
I'm not going to break down an error at third base that cost them late in a single ball game. No,
exactly.
I'll say this. One big place is the bullpen, right? Like, they have quite literally had the worst bullpen in baseball if you look at it from a wins above replacement perspective. Like, it's not just their last. They're last by more than two wins against the Colorado Rockies, and that is a team you don't want to be below in any pitching metric. So I think if they had had a solid or a bullpen kind of like they had the previous season, and they brought back many of the same guys, so they probably thought they were going to have that, you probably could find a good four or five wins there. Just in the difference between being awful and being, you know, average to slightly above average, that does not get you all the way there. I think a good Bo Bichette season probably gets you another 3 to 4 wins. And again, you know, you're knocking on the door here, maybe not trading some of those guys at the deadline. Maybe that's another win and a half. So it's not crazy to think they could have gotten there with a little bit different luck, but there were definitely flaws in this team. I don't think you want to let them off the hook and say, it's bad luck. They, you know, 12 wins is 12 wins. It's a pretty significant gap.
Yeah. I mean to like gloss over any of the many flaws this team has. There's going to be a lot of work ahead in the offseason, certainly. But I'm with you. I think the bullpen, like if the bullpen hadn't been historically bad, essentially, the bullpen was just mediocre to average, I think you'd probably watch them, like they'd probably be at least closer to where the Twins, Mariners, and Red Sox were at the end of the season. They might not be where the Tigers were. The Tigers were red hot at the end of the season. They might not be where the Royals were. The Royals were really good for most of the season, and it's because Bobby Witt Jr. is having a historical campaign, and Salvador Perez has still got it, and Seth Lugo has been terrific. Like, there are a lot of reasons why the Tigers and Royals are where they are, where the Blue Jays are where they are, certainly. But, you know, I think you're probably having a different conversation. Literally, if the bullpen was merely, I'm not even saying good, just merely average, and to your point, if Bo Bichette had been A, healthy, and B, hit like he normally does when he was healthy, you're probably having it. We're not doing this show today. Blake is doing today's show. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you might have had the, you know, the cliche, the meaningful baseball in September. Right. That's what people are always aiming for. You probably would have had that, and it would have affected how they treat the trade deadline as well, right? Instead of shipping off veteran players, you know, the one guy in the bullpen who was good this year, Jimmy Garcia, they probably wouldn't have traded him. You know, things like that. Justin Turner would have been an average hitter, might have kept him around. They would have potentially even added players. So, yeah, if we go alternative universe, there, it's not that hard to imagine a different world where this team did far better and was in the mix. But at the end of the day, the results are what the results are. And they not only did they not make the playoffs, they didn't make the playoffs by a pretty significant margin.
We're going to get to this a little bit later on in the program, but you can certainly text us 590-590, name and location. We're going to talk about free agents we feel the Blue Jays should focus on for a variety of reasons. And you can text us your pick for either a position of need in specifically or a free agent if you want to name someone. You can certainly text us that to 590-590, name and location. We'll get to those in a couple of minutes. I know you have one. I have a couple as well. There, you know, if you want to pick a reliever, you want to pick a starting member of the starting rotation who's a free agent perhaps, you want to pick a free agent third baseman or left fielder, whatever you want, really, shortstop, whatever you want, you can certainly text us that, either position or the player's name, to 590-590, name and location, and we'll read your texts in the second half of the show. But joining us right now on the program is David Singh from Sportsnet.ca. David, how are you?
Good, how about you?
We are great, man. It's nice to hear your voice. Nice to catch up with you. And look, you've had a front row seat to watching the Jays. You're writing for a lot for Sportsnet.ca this year. Your voice, actually, I don't know if you know this, has often featured on Jays Talk postgame when you're asking questions to John Schneider. So I thank you for that very much. But I wanted to start with the rotation before we go anywhere else. We've gotten to see Baden Francis and Kevin Gausman these last couple of days this week. Berríos certainly down the stretch here. Bassett as well. All of these guys have ended up being pretty consistent. I am curious, as someone who has gotten to see them up close and personal, you've asked them questions, how would you evaluate the starting rotation's performance on the whole when we include their starts to the season?
Yeah, I think you have to look at it in a positive light. I mean, look at what the rotation's done. It's been the strength of the team throughout the whole season. And, you know, the Jays have game notes at the beginning of every game. You know, you can pick it up in the press box. And one of the highlights, and it's kind of, I guess, not really talked about a lot, is I think it's since the end of August or something like that, maybe mid-August. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't give the exact date. But the rotation is ranked number one in so many stats across baseball. I think just given the context of how things have unfolded for, say, someone like Kevin Gausman, he started the season, you know, late in spring training. He didn't really have a spring training. Struggled out the gate and corrected himself midway through the season. You know, he struggled in the first half, the second half, and especially if his last, let's say, 6 to 10 starts have been excellent. He's rebounded. You look at Jose Berríos, he was great out of the gate. He encountered a little bit of a dip in, I want to say, June or July, and, you know, rebounded as well. And now he's on a string of, I think it's like 7 consecutive quality starts. So I think overall, if you're evaluating the rotation, it's a great sign. They've done great. And it's a positive when you add in Baden Francis and then kind of cast forward to next year and see what they can do again.
David, one of the things you're known for in terms of your own work is the long-form stories, the feature stories. And you had a really interesting one come out yesterday about Spencer Horwitz, who has had, you know, a fantastic rookie season with the Blue Jays. And that story is about the panic attacks he's experienced and how he's gotten over that and the way he's opened up on his own mental health, which has become, you know, a greater theme in the world of athletics over the last few years, I would say. And I'm curious if you could summarize that story a little bit for people who maybe haven't read it, but also tell us how that came about and how he ended up opening up to you in that way.
Yeah, thanks so much for highlighting that, Nick. So basically, it's about Spencer Horwitz, and when he was in college, when he was playing in the Cape Cod League, he had undergone a pretty severe panic attack during a game. So the story looks at that specific moment for him and what happened afterwards. And it was a life-changing moment for him because it was the first time that he'd really dealt with anxiety in such a, I guess, dramatic form. So from there, he left the Cape Cod League, and I'll let readers kind of read the story, so I won't give all of the details. But it basically looks at how he's the journey he's taken afterwards to understand his mental health and to prioritize his mental health and to kind of keep things in check for himself. I find that quite fascinating. And, you know, some behind the scenes stuff I can tell you about is just first off how open and vulnerable Horwitz was in talking about this. I had heard that he had experienced panic attacks in the past. And when I went up and asked him, listen, hey, I'm interested in doing this story about you, right away, he's like, whatever you need. And, you know, that's great. But he actually meant that. Those weren't just words for him. I mean, we sat down in three separate interviews. And in those interviews, his defense was never up. Like, he did not, his guard was completely down. He was fully open, fully vulnerable. And that struck me as different, you know, because usually when you meet professional athletes, especially someone at the major league level, right, it's very different than if you're speaking to an Olympian or a minor league player or something like that. This is a major league baseball player. Usually you don't get them to open up so much about their personal lives. And credit to Horwitz for doing so. And I'll even give you one little piece from the story that that really stands out, or from at least the interview process, is, you know, with mental health, there's a stigma attached. I think we can all agree on that, whether it's in sports or even in regular life and day-to-day life, there's a stigma attached when you talk about mental health. And I had written a story in 2019 about the Canadian Olympic team and how they dealt with their mental health issues. And players had told me that, or not players, athletes had told me that they were sometimes scared of admitting that they had mental health struggles for fear of it impacting their career, even as something as granular as playing time. They didn't want their coaches to know they were seeing a therapist because then they were scared that it would affect their playing time. So when I talked to Spencer and I asked him, listen, like, you know, this is a big risk for you, right? Like, there's a stigma that exists. So even talking about this is a big risk for you. And then I brought up my experience with the Olympic team. And he said, you know, if people don't want to hear this, then shame on them. If people hold that stigma, shame on them. And I thought, you know, for a guy he's a young player, he's 27, he's a rookie, but I thought that was a lot of wisdom coming from Spencer. So that's probably the best thing I could highlight about him through this entire process.
Yeah, I think that's impressive detail about the way he carries himself. And I actually wanted to ask you something about the young players and your impression in that regard. Because one of the things that you get as someone who's around the team more than a lot of other people is the opportunity to watch these guys go to work and see their work ethic, not just the production they put on the field. And so the Blue Jays have this cohort of young players who've come in, whether it's at the trade deadline or internally, they've kind of turned it over to this youth movement. I was wondering your impressions of this group of young players and the way that they go to work, and if there's anyone who's impressed you with the way they carry themselves, their professionalism, and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
I think the person who impresses me the most is Leo Jimenez. I think that from the moment he got up, you can just see him go to work every day with Carlos Fables, the infield instructor. You can see him at second base. You can see him at shortstop. And I did a story on him a couple weeks ago. First of all, he's just a very nice player to speak with. He's very humble, very gracious to the media, and he's thoughtful as well. And he was telling me the story was about a great double play that he started. And he was telling me, listen, like, defense has been my priority all year. And I'm just so happy I've been able to improve my defense. And that struck me as wild because he came into the big leagues as a polished defender. He was known for his defense. I mean, he's hit well since he's been up here, but he's not known as an offensive player. He's known as a defender. So just the fact that he's, like, trying to take his defense to the next level while in the major leagues, and he's utilizing the resources available to him. I mean, Fables is a renowned infield instructor who's responsible for Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts. And, you know, Jimenez realizes that, and he's been able to take advantage of that. So he's someone who strikes me as exciting, as interesting. And I'm actually, with second base, you know, potentially a question mark for the Blue Jays going into the offseason and into spring training, I'm interested to see how he fits into that picture.
We're chatting with David Singh from Sportsnet.ca here on Jays Talk Plus. You know, David, it's funny, when we try and evaluate a lot of the young guys, we talked about Horwitz, Jimenez. You can add in Will Wagner, Joey Loperfido. I'll still include Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider and Addison Barger. Like, we got to see, and this was a big part of the storylines for the team, I think, down the stretch of the season post-All-Star break, post-trade deadline, but it's been about evaluating a lot of these young guys. And I'm with you. I'm certainly very impressed by Leo. I think he's certainly a major leaguer. But to your point, the second base position, really a lot of the infield positions beyond first base because of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and shortstop, because you got to think that at least to start the season, Bo Bichette will open the team as a starting shortstop, open the year rather. So you're really talking about second base and third base. And it's interesting to see how the Blue Jays will fill those positions, because they could easily fill them. Whether or not this is a good idea is a different conversation, but they could easily fill those positions by internally, right? By backfilling, essentially. Like, the third base position could be a platoon of, let's say, Clement and Barger, and the second base could be a platoon of Jimenez and Wagner. Let's just say, for the sake of argument. I'm not sure that's a great idea necessarily, but I think I've seen enough from all of those guys that they're probably major leaguers. The problem is there are not enough spaces for all of these young men.
Yeah, there's so many different ways they can go in free agency, right? Like, they could get a third baseman.
Right.
And that could affect the players that are currently, that you just mentioned. It could make somebody expendable. They could make a trade. They could use some of this roster excess or this infield logjam that they have to maybe acquire a reliever. They definitely need help in the bullpen. So there's so many different ways they can go. I think for me, what's in terms of the how things play out and how pieces fit in the puzzle, what's most interesting to me is Vlad. And, you know, he's expressed several times over the last couple of weeks, and really over the last couple of months, expressed his interest in playing third base full time. And so if that happens, how does that change the complexion of the infield, right? Then you no longer need a third baseman. Does Horwitz slide in at first base? Do you go out and acquire a first baseman? There are many different ways the Blue Jays can take, and it's going to be a story to watch, or the main story to watch this offseason.
David, one of the reasons why I was keen to get you on the show today is because a lot of times on shows like this, we talk to people who have covered the team for a long time, and that's a really valuable perspective. But this was your first year, at least recently, in that more of a beat role, because you'd been known for the long-form stuff in the past. And so you had fresh eyes on the team in the way that a lot of other people didn't, I don't think, who are covering this Toronto Blue Jays roster. So before we let you go, I wanted to ask you what your impression of the team was in terms of what surprised you in your first year of doing this, what your expectations were, and what you learned about the Toronto Blue Jays franchise by being around them a significantly higher percentage of the time.
Yeah, I love that question, Nick. So, okay, the difference between a feature writer and a beat writer is vast. So as a feature writer, you're just parachuting in to a clubhouse, and you're there to do a story and talk to a few players, talk to some coaches, talk to the manager, and then you leave, and then you don't come back to that clubhouse for a while. And a beat writer is exactly what the name entails. You're around every day discovering, or just with your ear to the heartbeat of the team. So both roles allow for different interactions, and I have two nuggets for you. I think that what stuck out to me about this clubhouse, being in it almost every single day when they're at home and then traveling with them on the road, is the vibe of the clubhouse. I think what stood out to me is George Springer and his relation to that. So what struck me as very, very interesting in the beginning of the season was when Springer was going through his struggles. You know, those were well talked about. I mean, he was one of the worst hitters in the league from an OPS perspective. And people were wondering, like, should he even be in the lineup at this point? And to watch Springer go about his business every day was fascinating, because he was the exact same guy. He would always be smiling in the clubhouse. He'd be the clubhouse DJ. He'd be playing music. He'd be ribbing his teammates, joking around with teammates. He'd be putting in his work. Exact same guy as what he was when he was successful in the middle of the season. So he had that big hot stretch in I think it was June or July, and he was the exact same guy. Like, nothing changed with him. So when he was successful and when he was struggling, same person, you know, never got too high, never got too low. And I thought that was interesting because I think that does set the tone. I mean, you can see certain players when they're struggling, how they hang their head, they're sullen, they're quiet, and he never did that. So that was something that, okay, now I understand the heartbeat of a team, and George Springer is certainly a part of the heartbeat of the Blue Jays clubhouse. So that was interesting. And then another kind of clubhouse interaction along the same kind of wavelength is Chris Bassitt. And just how much teammates gravitated towards him. Being in the clubhouse so much, I'm privy to kind of seeing these little interactions. And I had read somewhere that baseball is kind of turning into the NFL in a certain way, in that, you know, starting pitchers and hitters or pitchers and hitters don't really kind of need to interact with each other anymore and know each other because they're just such different segments of the team. And there's so many different things for them to do. There's different places to be in the locker room, in the clubhouse, in the gym, in meetings. There's different priorities for each set. But it was interesting to see the position players on the team gravitate toward Bassitt in a way that I hadn't seen with other pitchers. He'll be sitting down playing cards with Dalton Varsho. He'll be sitting down with a rookie, a position player, at the jersey party that they had when they launched the City Connects. He was cold in court with about 10 players, pitchers and position players, just chatting about the game. So I thought that stood out as well. And it's these little interactions. As you know, Nick, I'm someone who cares more about the human interest side of sports. And that satisfied me, being able to pick up on those interactions this season.
So, David, with the season ending on Sunday, what's sportsnight.ca got you doing next?
I will be on playoff coverage.
Okay.
From home, though. I won't be traveling. Be playoff coverage in my sweatpants.
Hey, that's kind of the best kind of playoff coverage, no? I think I'll be doing a little bit of that myself, David.
It is. It's ideal.
Well, it's always ideal catching up with you, man. We appreciate you doing this. Thanks for it. Thanks for the piece on Spencer Horwitz. It's very important getting those kinds of pieces out into the world, and you did a great job with it, as you always do. So thank you so much.
Thank you both for having me. I appreciate it.
There he goes. That's David Singh from Sportsnet.ca. You know, it's a great piece. Again, you can find it on Sportsnet.ca. It's funny because it kind of came, about a week right after DeMar DeRozan was back in town. And I only bring that up because DeMar was back in town, of course, former Toronto Raptor, because he was promoting his book, which is called Above the Noise. And I bring it up because DeMar, I think, was the first athlete I can remember, Nick, and maybe it's just because we're here in Toronto and he played for the Raptors, that went out of his way to talk about mental health. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really remember a prominent athlete doing that quite to that extent. And again, maybe that's because we're in this echo chamber that is this city. But I was, generally speaking, I was very impressed by that. So I kind of, whenever I see more of that continue, I always think, you know what, it's good to see this kind of issue continuing to evolve, which is nice to hear that Spencer Horwitz, for example, was open enough or comfortable enough to be open with someone like David.
Yeah, as much as we're making progress on this point, and we absolutely are, I think, would Spencer Horwitz have done this piece 20 years ago, 15 years ago?
Right.
I'd be really surprised. And I'm not speaking against his character. I'm just saying what's the norm now compared to what it was back then. And a lot of people struggle with these things. And I think a lot of people see athletes as kind of these comic book superheroes, right? And, you know, they're big and strong and they kind of like look like Superman and you sort of assume that they're sort of invincible. And it's good for people to know that even these people who have achieved so much and, you know, sometimes have this great amount of physical strength or ability still encounter the type of struggles that people at home are dealing with as well. I think it humanizes them. It brings athletes and fans closer together. And it's people with a platform talking about something that's important, which can never hurt.
The article from David is called What Spencer Horwitz Learned from One of the Worst Moments of His Life. So you can read that on sportsnet.ca. Before we take a quick break here, Nick, another reminder that Sportsnet 590 The Fan is proud to support the Canadian Cancer Society's CIBC Run for the Cure. That'll be on Sunday, October 6th at Sir Winston Churchill Park. That is at 301 St. Clair Avenue West, Toronto. That is where registration gets underway at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. This is Canada's largest single-day volunteer-led event in support of all people impacted by breast cancer. Funds raised will support world-leading breast cancer research and the compassionate support system for all who need it. For full details, visit sportsnet.ca/590 or cancer.ca. I actually ran in this event about 7 or 8 years ago at this point. Gosh, time flies, honestly. It was before I worked at Sportsnet, essentially. I actually used to work for CIBC in corporate. And I tell you, man, the amount of people who come out for this event and the amount of people who for whom it means, it's very personal to them. It's pretty cool to be a part of that, I got to say. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever participated in
these. It's something that's touched so many people's lives,
sure.
Right? Across people of all sorts of different backgrounds and experiences. It sort of cuts, unfortunately, to a variety of people's hearts, and it's important to have that kind of support out there.
That is on Sunday, October 6th, again, Sir Winston Churchill Park, the Canadian Cancer Society, CIBC, Run for the Cure. Let's take a very quick break, Nick, and on the other side, go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. Get the listeners' picks for free agents they are looking at in the offseason, change they want to see, positions of need. We'll get your picks. I have some picks as well. And chat all things Blue Jays as the Blue Jays season final series of the season begins tonight at the Rogers Centre. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus. Show and Nick with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We'll be back on Sportsnet as well.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Jays Talk Plus here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, on Sportsnet Television as well. Show Ali and Nick Ashbourne. The final segment of Jays Talk Plus for the rest of the year. I got to imagine, now I've not been told this explicitly, but the way it has worked in the last couple of years is, should there be some kind of breaking news in the off season, usually two things happen. Blair and Barker snap into action, and Blake does as well. So Blair and Barker will give their own take on what happens, and Blake does too. So, for example, after the Ohtani debacle and the plane debacle last season, we had a post-Ohtani reset for free agency, and Blake was the shepherd of that program. So I think you can probably expect something pretty similar. So it's probably, again, barring a miserable offseason for the Blue Jays, it is probably not the last time you will hear Jays Talk Plus and hear from Blake before, let's say, New Year's, but it is certainly the last time this show will be on the air for the regular season.
Yeah, like you said, if there's no breaking news surrounding the Toronto Blue Jays between now and the end of 2024, they are in trouble yes. for 2025.
They are, and here's the thing. They're going to make some moves. And again, whether they are moves that you are happy with, I think those are not necessarily the same thing. I hope they are the same thing, but they're not necessarily always the same thing. But I did want to get your take, Nick, and I want to get the listeners' take as well. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Standard data and messaging rates do apply, as always. But if you could only pick one position of need, one free agent, the one single part of this franchise you would allocate the greatest amount of dollars or change to, what would it be? So 590-590, name and location. There's actually a text here, just real quick, Nick. There's a text here from Adam in North York. And I wanted to get this first because I wanted to get this out of the way. Not because it's unimportant, because I think it is very important. And Adam says, the positions they need to change are president and general manager. There's no use tinkering. And I've said this before. I do agree with that because I've said to you many times that, you know, it's a results-oriented business. And if you're not getting results, there likely will be change. That's just how professional sports are. It's not a baseball-only thing. Happens in the NFL, happens in the NHL, it happens in basketball as well. And baseball is no different. So it's probably time for change to happen. Having said that, it does feel like based on all reading the tea leaves, because that's kind of all you could do at this point, reading the tea leaves does not seem to indicate, I would say, a whole lot of change on the way. Like the other day, earlier this week, I think, we got to see some Shai Davidi, Arden Swelling, a whole host of Blue Jays reporters were reporting that there were changes coming at the minor league level, right? Like the coaches with the Florida Complex League and the Dunedin, and people in the variety of levels, single A, double A, triple A, people are being replaced or being let go, for example. I don't think you make those changes if the general manager of the team, who is in theory in charge of all of that from a top-down perspective, or the president who's in charge of all of that from a top-down perspective, it doesn't necessarily scream change at that point if he's the one making changes elsewhere in the organization.
A lot of fans, again, want this change. The text you received, I'm sure you'll receive many texts over the course of this program that will say something similar to
yeah.
that. And the results, to some degree, you could say justify that type of change. As you mentioned, this team has been a big disappointment in 2024. They have not had success in the playoffs in this era, except for 2016, which was sort of an inherited team. So I understand that. What I will say is that I don't think the 2025 Blue Jays are doomed to fail if these people are still in charge. The idea that if you don't get rid of them, they can't change the roster and make it a wild card, at least caliber team, I don't agree with that. I don't think that this group is so tragically incompetent that they can't possibly put together a decent team. They have put together good teams that fell just short. You know, the 2021 team, that was a really, really good team. And I think there was some bad fortune associated with that team. 2022, it was also a good team as well. So again, like I said, people calling for that group to be ousted, I understand that. I think to a great degree that's justified, but I don't think that if that change doesn't happen, people should be discouraged and feel like this team is going nowhere, has no hope in 2025.
Yeah, it certainly feels like based on, again, everything we've heard, they're going to get another kick at the can, effectively. And we'll see if they get a kick at the can again in 2026, because we've heard there are not a lot of contract extensions necessarily in store for either Shapiro or Atkins. So if that's the case, maybe that does say something about ownership's confidence in where the team is at. But you want to text us, you can certainly text about that. But again, the biggest area of change, need, free agents, you can name specific guys if you want, a specific position, certainly, 590, 590, name and location. All right. Give me your largest free agent that you are looking at, or position of need, if that's what you want to do. I am only going to say this. For the sake of this argument, you are not allowed to pick Juan Soto. Okay? You're not allowed to pick. I don't think you leaned that way. But I said this before. I do think there will be a chat between the Blue Jays and Soto's agent. There might even be a contract offer. But between the Yankees and Mets, I have a hard time believing Soto's leaving New York. So I'm going to ban him from this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, is there a literal chance the Blue Jays sign Juan Soto? Yes.
Yes.
They're a big enough market to be taken seriously by an agent. They can present an offer. Is that chance above, 2.4% to pull a number out of the air? I don't think so. So it's fair to leave Soto aside. One guy I really like is Christian Walker at first base. Right. Now, this would mean probably Vladdy moving to third base, in my view, not full-time. I would see him as sort of a third base slash DH slash spelling Walker at first occasionally. But the thing about Walker is he's been so consistent. If you look at his WRC plus, which is kind of my favorite catch-all offensive stat, 100 is average. So however you are above 100 is the percentage better you are than the league average hitter. 122, 122, 119, last 3 years. You know exactly what you're getting from him. You're getting kind of 25, 26 to 32, 33 home runs. You're getting unbelievable defense at first base. I know it's not a premium defensive position, but he is probably the best defensive first baseman in all of baseball, which just, it helps the rest of your infield. Sometimes that can't be captured perfectly in numbers, but as good as Vladdy can be in terms of individual highlights at first base, on a game-in, game-out basis, he would give you a lot more there. He's a right-handed thumper in the middle of the lineup you can trust probably to hit behind Vladdy, to be honest. You know the offensive level is there. He's also a little bit older. I know that's not generally considered to be a positive. He's 33, but because there hasn't been any decline in his last couple of years, I'm a little bit more confident in that. And I think you wouldn't be required to hand him that, that 7-8 year contract. You could get him on, a 2-4 year contract, which might make a little bit more sense. So he's a guy I like a lot, not necessarily a huge superstar, maybe not even the cleanest fit, but just a really good, reliable player who'd improve this lineup a lot.
Yeah, Walker going to be 34 by the beginning of the season. So like in effect, next year is his like age 34 season. So to your point, are you signing someone who's going to be 34 years old for the majority of 2025? Are you signing that guy to a 7-year deal? No. I would say no team is. Just forget the Blue Jays. Like, no team in free agency is going to offer Walker more, I'm guessing, than 4 years max.
And right? If you're doing four, that's kind of probably to spread the money out to a little bit. That's probably to bring the value down on an individual year-by-year basis, or maybe to differentiate yourself because someone else isn't doing it. You're really thinking of it, I think, as 2 years you're really hoping to get the Christian Walker that you've had the last little bit, and then maybe that third year is a little bit iffy, and then the fourth year is probably a write-off.
Yeah, like I think ideally it would be 3 years, but if you had to go, and I mean the Blue Jays have done this. I mean they did this with George Springer. Remember the conversation about Springer was that he might have signed with the Mets, and the Jays effectively offered him a little bit more money and an extra year of security to get him to come to the Blue Jays. So if that's what you got to do to solidify that position, maybe it's not the worst idea, because you got to think too. And again, a lot of this is predicated on the idea that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is getting offered like a 10 or 12 year deal or whatever it is to stay a Blue Jay for the rest of his career. And if that's the case, then if Vladdy signs, like, let's say a 12 year deal and he's at third base for 3 of those years, then once Walker's deal is up and he's closer to retirement and he leaves, then you can just put Vladdy back at first base if that's what you want to, and then try and solve the third base situation again later on, or keep him at third or move him to DH. There are a lot of solutions you can have, I think, that are a little bit easier maybe if you're having someone on a first base contract that is a little bit more short term.
Also, I think part of the Vladdy wanting to play third base component is a contract value thing. Like, he knows that third basemen are considered more valuable around the game than first basemen are. He wants to play some third base before he signs that big contract. Once you get him under the big contract, you have a little bit more ability to move him around as the team needs. It's like, okay, maybe you are going to play a little bit more DH, Vladdy. Maybe we are going to slot you in at first base more days than is ideal in terms of, I don't know, your ego or your preferred position, but we've already come to an agreement on that. And so they don't need to work as much in terms of his ideal defensive situation. There's a little bit more flexibility. Like I said, I don't think Walker's the perfect fit in terms of position, but I just like what he brings offensively. I like the consistency, and I do really like that defense.
I think Walker is legitimately a very gettable target because of the age frankly, for a team that spends like the Blue Jays, like, I would say most people are gettable, but Walker does seem like someone who would fit very well. My pick is someone who is perhaps a little less gettable because of A, the position he plays, and B, again, because of this position, he's going to command a whole hell of a lot more money. I'm going with Willy Adames, because with Willy Adames, who's had a phenomenal season for the Milwaukee Brewers this year, he plays shortstop. Adames is also the kind of person who you can, in theory, ask to play multiple positions. Like, if you are not sure what the future holds for Bo Bichette, if you are convinced that Bo is not going to sign a long-term deal with the Blue Jays and he's going to look for a change of scenery come a couple of years from now, let's say, like, after next season, I should say, then you can, in theory, sign Adames to help alleviate this conversation we're talking about with Vladdy third base, first base. You could leave Vladdy at first base. You can, in theory, have Bo at short to start the season anyways, have Adames on a long-term deal, have him play third, and if you lock down Vladdy, if Bo does eventually move on, you just kind of shift everyone around. Like, Vlad could play third, Adames could play short. I think there are a lot of ways you could make it work with all three of Adames, Bo, and Vladdy. Now, are you going to pay all three of them long-term whole lot of money? Probably not.
That's it for Bo.
Right?
If you sign Adames, that's it for Bo, which I think most of us would agree it probably is. That's the case anyway. Right. I think it would be a surprise if Bo signs that long-term deal. Also, Adames is probably a better defensive shortstop than Bo. And so if you brought someone like that in, I think you say to Bo, okay, you're going to play second base now. Because we have you on a one-year contract, essentially. We pretty much know we're not going to re-sign you because we just dumped all this money on Adames. So I think you put Adames at shortstop and bring Bo to second in that situation, which, again, might not be Bo's favorite, but it's a little bit, you know what, it's tough. You're under contract for one more year, and then we'll see where we go from there. And it would be interesting to actually see Bo at second because it's been talked about so much over the last few years.
I wanted to get to one more, and I'm going to get one more from you before we go to the text line. Again, 590, 590, name and location. A lot of good ones here coming into the text line, so we'll get to those in a sec. I'm going to pick if Adames is too pie in the sky, because let's face it, Adames and probably Bregman, I'm guessing, are getting paid a lot of money by someone. That's the reality of their positions too, right? They were having good seasons, and I know Bregman missed some time due to injury earlier in the year, but third base, shortstop, they generally tend to get paid a little bit more than first baseman, for example, right? That's just generally how it is. So if they are too high in the sky, someone who I think in the Christian Walker vein is very gettable is Canada's own Tyler O'Neill, who, of course, was traded in the offseason from the Cardinals to the Red Sox, and he will be a free agent this coming season. And sure, maybe he re-signs with the Red Sox, but plays left field. Left field seems to be a position of need for the Blue Jays in the sense that you can get by with someone who's a little bit less than defensively if you have your starting center fielder be Dalton Varsho and your starting right fielder being George Springer. I think you can get by with someone in left field who's not quite as stoic as them defensively if he's blasting bombs. Now, there is a bit of a health concern with Tyler O'Neill. He's not quite as durable as some of the other guys we've talked about, but, I mean, gosh, I think he's gettable in the sense that he's not super young. He's a free agent. I think the added bonus of him being Canadian is like the cherry on top, essentially. But he also just hits dingers. And that's kind of a thing the Blue Jays have lacked for the last couple of years.
He would play your Teoscar Hernandez role, right? Like he would come in and he'd hit behind Vladdy. And you know, he doesn't get on base at an unbelievable clip. He does strike out a lot. He's not always going to walk. But he hits behind your big guys and he knocks them in with home runs. It's a very basic concept. People have been using baseball for a long time. Put the guy who hits a bunch of home runs in the four spot. I think it would really work. As you mentioned, the difficulty with him is durability. That has been a worry with him over the course of his career, even though he's relatively young. I think he's just 30 right now. So he's had those issues even in his 20s, which is sometimes worrying. But I do like that because the left field position also is one where they have quite a few young guys who could, in theory, slot in, right? Like, you know, you've got Barger, you've got Loperfido, you've got Schneider. I don't think any of those guys have won a starting spot. You'd feel
Lucas,
pretty...
Lucas, maybe.
Lucas. You feel comfortable bringing in a veteran to play that position because, yeah, and it is, to be fair, it's tough for a rookie to earn that spot over just kind of 2 months or so, but none of them have stood out to an extent where you say, that position is for this guy. I think you're comfortable bringing in an established player like O'Neill, and he just has the massive raw power, which this lineup needs, frankly.
All right, so I went with Adames and O'Neill. You had Christian Walker. Do you have another one before we get to the text line?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Tanner Scott, and he's arguably the best reliever available, so this is going to cost you a lot of money as well. They do not traditionally spend that kind of money in the bullpen. They haven't in the past, but you know what? When you have a historically bad bullpen, maybe it's time to reevaluate how you're doing business. And with relievers, there's that year-to-year volatility. It always scares people. They say, we're not sure what we're going to get from a guy. The sample sizes are so small. Tanner Scott, over the last 2 years, you're looking at 150 innings of a 2.04 ERA. The stuff is nasty. It's like a 97-mile-an-hour plus fastball, a wicked slider. He comes from the left side, which I think is important because they do have Chad Green. They do potentially have Jordan Romano if he makes a full recovery. They have a little bit of juice on the right side, but their lefties, you know, Yenesis Cabrera is sort of more of a middle reliever in my books. Brendan Little is, yeah, I think he's kind of interesting, but he's not someone you totally count on. Could be someone who gets optioned and is more of a depth reliever for them. He would really solidify the back end of their bullpen. It would be a many multi-year deal. It would cost a lot of money. There'd be some sticker shock there, but it's time to invest in this bullpen, and he's the guy I'd want to put my money on.
Yeah, Tanner Scott probably has a good chance of maybe, we'll see. He plays on the West Coast now, which I think makes it hard for people in this market specifically. But now that he no longer plays for Miami, because, of course, he got traded at the deadline to the Padres, he has a chance, I think, to maybe make a name for himself because he's already pretty famous, but just in the sense of in prime time, in a playoff game, if they need to shut it down for the Padres late in the game, he has a chance, I think, to become a little more familiar, become maybe closer to a household name, and I'm sure people will be more excited when he does hit the free agent market.
He can earn some money playoffs, for sure. Yeah, His agent is really happy about the Padres being in the playoffs. He has a chance to make some money with some of those high-leverage spots.
Let's get to the text line. 590-590, name and location. Got a couple minutes left here. Let's see. We got one from Elliot and Markham. Elliot is keeping it simple. He says, or she says, I don't want to presume, they need at least one more big bat. I think that's going to be a common refrain, Nick, because... you know, offense was at a premium, it felt like, for much of the season. So I'm going to say a lot of people are going to be on board with Elliott. Bobby in Toronto says, give me Tyler or Tony Taters. Tony Taters, I'm like reasonably sure, refers to Anthony Santander.
Yeah, it has to. Tony Taters, that's decent. I don't mind that. As a nickname or as a player. I'm a little bit worried with Santander in terms of how strong his 2024 season has been compared to the rest of his career.
Right, right.
He's been a bit of a defensive liability, so he really has to mash. And he's mashed this season. He's got over 40 home runs.
Yeah.
So he does fit the profile. Basically everything we were just saying about Tyler O'Neill, he fits that fairly well. But the defense is a little bit more of a problem, and there's just a little bit less faith that he can sustain what he did in 2024, whereas O'Neill, even though he's had some injury seasons, he's also had seasons that look like his 2024 in the past, even if they're a couple years out.
Yeah, Justin and Vaughn says it's got to be Anthony Santander. He already knows the AL East, and he hits like a beast. And it's true. I mean, there is some concern of whether or not he can keep up this level of production. Well over 40 home runs, over 100 RBI. That's a great season. That's essentially a better season than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had. He's great. He has not had to play, if you're curious, a lot of left field this season in particular, even though he has played left field for the Orioles in the past, largely because this season for the Orioles, Ryan O'Hearn and Colton Cowser, who's a rookie, they have largely played left field for the Orioles. But prior to this year, he's gotten a whole heck of a lot of starts in left. So I don't think that's a huge issue. Like if you look at his splits and say, oh, well, he's only really played right field this year, I don't think that's a big worry for me. So that's definitely a good part of it, because in theory, you know, if you wanted to slot in someone else in left and Springer is sitting, for example, or Springer long-term after his contract expires and you do sign Santander to a long-term deal, he could just play right as well. So that's definitely a good thing to have. There's a text here from, well, there's no name on this one. First baseman is another position of need, and build up the bullpen. I think that speaks to your idea of Scott and Christian Walker. Trevor in Halifax says, I'd love for them to throw everything at Juan Soto and take him away from the Yankees. That would be nice. But he goes on to say, if they're completely out on him, move all your focus to Alex Bregman. Solidify third base, really good defense, a guy who has won before. I think he'll be a perfect guy for that clubhouse. Love the show, boys. Thank you, Trevor. We appreciate it, man. Look, I wouldn't mind Alex Bregman, certainly, again, at third base. I feel like there are more needy teams. And honestly, this includes the Astros, if we're being honest. But there are more needy teams at third base because other teams don't have the option of putting Vladdy at third, if that makes sense. If Vladdy wasn't a Blue Jay, I'd say, yeah, you know what, back up the Brinks truck for Alex Bregman. But they can, in theory, solve that problem with like less money, effectively, by signing a first baseman instead of a third baseman and have Vladdy play at third, even if Alex Bregman is a better defender than Vladdy.
Bregman scares me a little bit, I'm going to be honest. He's one of those players where it feels like you're paying a little bit, and to us, the Blue Jays did this a little bit with George Springer. You're paying a little bit for the intangibles, for some of the team success that he's been there, done that. And, you know, lots of players could have been really good on the Houston Astros. I'm not saying that he's not talented. He absolutely is. But his contact quality has been down fairly significantly this year. I'm worried that he's more of a good hitter than like a power threat at this point, yeah, into his 30s. And what the Blue Jays, it feels like, really need is that significant power threat. Because even some of their good hitters are guys who are more plate discipline oriented, more on base oriented. Even Vladdy's unbelievable year. Like, he has a very strong home run total, but not an incredible one. And I think he'll probably do better than low 30s next year, chances are, because his April and May were really, really low power. I doubt that will be replicated. But when I think of the Blue Jays lineup and investing in the guy you're putting the most money into, because I think there's going to be more than one player that comes into this lineup, to be honest, I would put it into a big-time power threat.
There's a text here. Actually, there's a couple of texts about this player, which is kind of interesting. Richard from Bowmanville, pitcher from Japan, Sasaki and Santander. So Roki Sasaki, I might be mispronouncing his name, but he is 22 years old, plays in Japan. The only thing I will say about that is that I admit it gets a little murky, is when how the posting rules for players from overseas works, because he is technically under contract, I think, in NPB until a certain point, which is why like Kikuchi didn't come over until he was a certain age, or certainly Shohei didn't come over until he was a certain age. I think it does have something to do with the posting rules vis-a-vis NPB rules and how they interact with Major League Baseball's rules. But I mean, that was the same case for Yamamoto when Yamamoto signed with the Dodgers this past offseason. Don't get me wrong. Like if you were able to back up the Brinks truck for someone like Sasaki, he's supposed to be amazing. Everything
he's
heard,
unbelievable. Yeah. And we saw him at the World Baseball Classic too. He has some of the best stuff in the entire world. He's a young player. The problem is that the way the posting system has changed, there's now much more of a limitation on how much money these Japanese teams can get. So they're far less incentivized to post guys. They used to have to post guys and get kind of basically whatever the market would bear. Yeah. So they would even put out some of their young stars because they could bring in such an amount of money. Now that amount has been limited, so teams are more reluctant to post guys who are really young and really good, like Sasaki. You might have to wait for him to become a free agent to come over, because his team just doesn't get as much from putting him on the posting system as they did in the past.
Appreciate all the texts. 590-590, name and location. The final series of the year begins tonight at the Rogers Center. It'll be Jays Marlins at the Dome. First pitch goes 7:07 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on the main Sportsnet channel or Sportsnet Plus, or if you prefer, you can join us on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Nick, I don't want to do a long goodbye necessarily, if only because you and I will be back tomorrow for pregame coverage at the Dome. We'll have Jays Talk Classic as well afterwards, but it has been a fun run covering for Blake with you on Jays Talk Plus here a couple of times this season.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Like you said, it would be weird to do a big emotional goodbye. This is not our show. We are substitute teachers here, and we will literally be back with you again on Saturday doing Jays Talk Plus. So it is not the time or the place for that, but it has been nice to change it up and do the show with you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And again, I know Jays Talk Plus has been on all season, and it doesn't go for the whole season unless you get a lot of great work from a lot of great people. So certainly want to thank all the guests who have been on Jays Talk Plus all year long, including David Singh, who joined us today. But I want to thank everyone who's made this program great this season. Certainly Blake. Blake's a big, probably the biggest part of that, I would say. I want to thank Julia Kreutz, who did it with me as well. I want to thank Jen Rolnick, Amit Mann, Andrew Adams, Austin Mackey, Tristan Marcagiani, Nick Liu, Kyle Crabe, Luke Squadron, Devang Desai. There are so many people who make the show great and is what it is. And they're the best. It's as simple. They really are the best. But Nick, you're the best. I will see you tomorrow. For Nick Ashbourn, I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for listening to Jays Talk Plus all season long. Again, the final series of the year goes tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the whole radio network. I'm Sho Ali. We'll talk to you later.